Master scheduling. After the collaborative process of sales and operations planning creates a unified forecast. After input from partners using CPFR registered trademark or an equivalent, and after input from DRP and other actual demand sources such as direct customer orders, master scheduling, MS, creates a master production schedule that will commit the company to produce specific products on particular dates. The ISCM Supply Chain Dictionary defines the master schedule as a format that includes time periods, dates, the forecast, customer orders, projected available balance, available to promise, ITP, and the master production schedule, MPS. It takes into account the forecast, the production plan, and other important considerations such as backlog, availability of material, availability of capacity, and management policies and goals. C. Master production schedule, MPS. While the planning so far has worked only with aggregate supply and demand for product families, the master scheduling process disaggregates the product family data into specific units of individual products. Master scheduling considers current inventory levels, forecasts, demand plans, and order backlogs to decide how much of each item to produce. Master scheduling also determines weekly production dates based on the monthly projections in the production plan. The ISCM Supply Chain Dictionary defines a master schedule item as a part number selected to be planned by the master scheduler. The item is deemed critical in its impact on lower-level components or resources such as skilled labor, key machines, or dollars. Therefore, the master scheduler, not the computer, maintains the plan for these items. A master schedule item may be an end item, a component, a pseudo number, or a planning bill of material, BOM. Exhibit 4-2, Master Scheduling Grid. Source, IPIC's Master Planning of Resources, version 3.1. Calculating the PIB. Prior to the demand time fence, the calculation is as follows. With an example from period 1 in the exhibit, after the DTF, the calculation is as follows. With an example from period 6, exhibit 4-3, Master Scheduling Grid. Allocation of supply and available to promise, ITP. The ISCM Supply Chain Dictionary defines allocation as 1. The classification of resources or item quantities that have been assigned to specific customer or manufacturing orders, but have not yet been shipped to the customer or released from the stockroom to production. 2. A process used to distribute material in short supply. SIN. Assignment. C. Reservation. Allocation of supply involves giving sales staff or downstream supply chain partners a view into the projected available balance and what is available to promise to customers. It includes finding ways to commit inventory and schedule production to specific customer orders, intermediate customers or ultimate customers, including order promising by salespersons, without needing to move the items from inventory until they are needed for production. As per the second definition, allocation also refers to demand management and prioritization activities. Several methods are used to compute available to promise depending on whether or not the inventory is perishable. Perishables cannot be promised into future periods, while other methods allow unused inventory or backlogs to be carried forward. The example that follows shows the most basic method, the non-cumulative, discrete method. This method is used for perishable products, in other words, those with an expiration date, such as milk, vegetables, pharmaceuticals, or beer. Beer, for example, has a 6-month time frame. Other methods factor in inventory from prior periods or the backlog. ITP for the first period of the planning horizon is calculated as follows. For all other periods in which there is an MPS, the ITP does not include inventory on hand. So the formula is as follows. With an example from period 3 of the exhibit, purposes of the MPS. By providing firm production dates and numbers, the MPS serves as a contract between sales and operations. Putting numbers to the mutual obligations implied by the MPS contract offers benefits to both sides. For the sales force, the MPS provides assurance that they may make delivery commitments to customers based on the amount of product that will be available, week by week. For operations, the commitment of the sales force to meet its numbers provides assurance that they can avoid problems resulting from overproduction or an excess of orders. Those problems include layoffs and unused plant capacity in the case of overproduction, and the need to expand capacity rapidly and temporarily when orders exceed capacity. From the viewpoint of the company and the supply chain, the balance of supply and demand offers several potential benefits. Low holding costs for inventory. Fewer stockouts that might back up customer orders. causing frustration and reduced loyalty. Efficient use of plant, labor, and equipment. Weekly dates for specific products. Besides disaggregating the product families, master scheduling also determines weekly production dates based on the monthly projections in the production plan. Exhibit 4-4 shows what might happen to monthly S and OP numbers for a family of laser printers when the master scheduler disaggregates the projections into weekly production numbers for specific models. Note that the exhibit shows production numbers only, not demand projections. Exhibit 4-4. Disaggregation of operations plan numbers into weekly MPS. Commitment decision points. Two situations could frustrate buyer-supplier relationships when actual demand data and demand plans are shared. When the supplier apparently does not use the demand information and has not developed sufficient capacity, or maintains too much capacity, despite being given time and motivation to make the necessary changes. When the supplier builds sufficient capacity or inventory, but the organization fails to order in that quantity because the plans overstate demand, or they understated demand and the supplier has insufficient capacity. Since these problems affect both ends of the relationship, organizations that choose to collaborate should clearly set expectations and obligations in the form of a bilateral contract or trading partner agreement. Such agreements can specify how demand information will be communicated and what is expected of each organization in terms of building capacity or ordering what was requested. The agreement should specify development of formal processes to support the collaborative effort. Such an agreement should specify when demand information represents a commitment to purchase goods or services, and when it does not. This can be done using decision points similar to the time fences that are introduced elsewhere. Exhibit 4-5 shows how decision points could be used to create three zones of purchase commitment so that sellers can feel comfortable committing to produce the requested orders on schedule. Exhibit 4-5, use of decision points to create purchase commitment zones. In this example, the organization negotiates two decision points with a supplier, a firm commitment decision point and a volume commitment decision point. The firm commitment decision point is set 3 weeks out, and this creates a frozen zone where the buyer commits to communicate purchase orders and makes firm requests for delivery timing on specific days. The buyer and the supplier negotiate a second decision point at 16 weeks out, a volume commitment decision point, which creates a slushy zone before the point and a liquid zone after the point. Within the slushy zone, demand that is communicated is treated as an agreement to specify weekly quantities to deliver. The buyer can rearrange priorities or change timing of orders, but must buy the specified quantity of goods or services during those weeks. The liquid zone is used to communicate updates to the demand plan over whatever remains of the demand plan's planning horizon, 5 to 18 months in this example. Demand information communicated for these periods represents no contractual commitments for purchasing or production on the part of the buyer or the supplier. If negotiations take this format, the subjects for negotiation will include where each decision point should be placed, based on the given industry, the supplier and buyer lead times, and the amount of flexibility or continuity each partner desires in the relationship. These negotiations should occur at the executive level with input from both organizations' supply and demand professionals. This will ensure that the plan encompasses all technical requirements for order timing while getting top support for the agreement. This type of agreement allows the organizations to have a long-term focus and provide some amount of stability for the buyer and the supplier and perceived fairness for both parties. Time fences for material requirements planning. Time fences for material requirements planning, MRP, basically, planning for components or subcomponents of a production unit, work similarly to those described for master scheduling, except that each plan component will have its own set of time fences. The purpose of using time fences in MRP is to ensure that materials needed for orders are committed to those orders and not used for other purposes. The planning time fence is usually set when the material is ordered or production is begun on the component. The demand time fence is usually set when the material is received or production of the component is complete. Time fences in MRP help manage the end item's cumulative lead time because the operation will have its requisite materials available when they are needed. Cumulative lead time is defined by the ISCM Supply Chain Dictionary as the longest planned length of time to accomplish an activity. It is the sum of the lead time for each bill of material, BOM, path below an item. Whichever path adds up to the greatest number defines cumulative lead time. Since aggregate lead time, combined lead time, composite lead time, stacked lead time. C. Critical path lead time, planning horizon, planning time fence. Complex products or services often have lengthy production or rollout cycles and thus multiple time fences. For example, a ship's hull may have one set of time fences, its engines another, and the furnishings for the cabins could have another set much later in production than the first two. Benefits of time fences. Time fences can help balance the need for a production system to maintain schedules and control costs against the need for it to be flexible. Costs for changes dramatically increase when nearing the final deadline of a time horizon. Rescheduling, additional setups, rerouting, expediting, overtime, and disrupted schedules for other items can all be direct costs of late changes, not to mention the toll it takes on the perceived reliability of the master production schedule and on customer service. However, flexibility is needed because customers can cancel orders or request changes, equipment can experience failures, or other capacity problems could occur. Raw materials could be used at a higher rate than expected, for example, scrap, or suppliers could fail to deliver goods on time.